Hi everyone, and welcome to Industry Insights, the EFM podcast, presented by the European Film Market of the Berlinale. My name is AC Coppens. I'm the founder of The Catalyst, and I will be your host today. Industry Insights put the spotlight on highly topical, trend-setting industry issues, a real compass for the film year ahead. This year-round podcast is co-funded by Creative Europe Media. Today's episode is all about marketing that works, tools and tactics to move the needle. A fascinating conversation recorded during the EFM industry sessions last February. We explored the dynamic world of global film marketing in the age of audience engagement, diving into fresh strategies, smart tools, and innovative campaigns that are reshaping how films connect with audiences worldwide. First up, two fantastic experts. Marina Kosten, digital futures researcher at USC Annenberg and former 20th Century Fox executive. And Adriana Trotman, global marketing strategist with senior leadership roles at Amazon and Paramount. They share insights on how to effectively internationalize local stories and turn them into global successes, powered by data signals, algorithmic insights, and precise audience targeting. Then, Joanna Suleka, international marketing and festivals strategist and head of Alpha Panda in Warsaw, takes us behind the scenes of the award season digital campaign for The Girl with the Needle in an exclusive case study. So, let's dive right in and discover the tools and tactics that are truly moving the needle in today's global film landscape. So we're going to have a little exploration through the themes that we were announcing here. I want to build this conversation in three parts. We will have a look first at the globalization of content. Then we will explore the role of data. And then we will finish the first part conversation with the audience connection. And then we will invite Joanna to come on stage and bring us like enhanced cases and examples. But first of all, to the two of you, I mean, it's wonderful that you both worked at the heart of major studios shaping international content strategies. So I want to know from each of you first as an introductory question, like, what is actually marketing strategy? It looks so blah, you know, like marketing strategy. And everybody's like, I don't want to have a marketing strategy. What is marketing? Where does it start, so to speak? Marina, do you want to take it?
To me, marketing is very simple. It's making sure that the right consumer gets the right message at the right time and on the right platform to move them from knowing you're about your product to doing something about it. It's really that simplistic. It's a very complicated strategical undertaking. It's not as simple to make it happen. But when you're making your movies, you're making it for somebody. And that somebody that you have in mind is the first responder that you're going to get during the campaign. And our job as marketers is to expand that as wide as possible based on a variety of stories that your content has. But it's always, who's the right consumer? When's the right time? What's the right platform? And what is the right message to get them to come?
Whoa, that's a lot of work, right? I mean, it looks like, okay, that's great. What about you? Tell us, Adriana.
Well, she just told you what marketing
yeah,
is.
No. I want your point of view.
I would have to agree. I think generally speaking, when we talk about marketing, there's a tendency to think about, oh, it's a big billboard or it's a TV spot during the World Cup. And you think, oh, how can I possibly access something like that? And really it's about your audience. And it's thinking about who would enjoy watching your movie and giving them a compelling reason to do so. And you may have a variety of audiences, lots of different people who would be interested in watching your movie, and you might have to give them different reasons to watch your movie. It's not about that you telling them what your movie is about, because you don't need to tell them everything. You just need to give them at least one compelling reason that they're going to want to watch your movie and enjoy watching it. You want to bring them in and then let them go on the journey of the movie itself. So I think we tend to overcomplicate things when really it's about that.
Yeah. Yesterday there was also a session at the talents also saying like the most important point is your positioning and your message. You start with that and then you can roll it out. Okay, so let's start with the minimal theme of like globalization of content, real. So audiences today, and we saw this also in a former session here at the EFM industry sessions, were looking at the statistics and the developments in the market and the trends in the market. audiences today are more open to international content, but that was not always the case, by the way, right? So I don't know, do you see this shift in viewing habits on, like, you know, from local to international anyway? Is it something which came after the pandemics or during the pandemics or because of the younger generation? What's happened there? Maybe starting with you, Adrienne.
Yeah, I think there's one of the biggest trends that I've seen and that I'm excited about is the democratization of content, right? So we're in a place now where, you know, 10, 15 years ago, the advent of digital cinema reduced the barriers to entry to cinemas. Social media reduced the entry point to be able to connect directly with customers around the world. And then today we're seeing the streaming world as well as giving this opportunity for content to be visible around the world simultaneously in every single market. So there's this ability for content to reach broad audiences all at once that's combined with the fact that, yes, during the pandemic, we all watched more content than we'd ever watched before. And once you've gone through the entire catalog, it makes you more open to watching something new, to taking a risk, to watch something that maybe you haven't heard anything about, but hey, it's there and it's easy and I have free time. And customers started to experiment more and they started to like what they were seeing. Mm-hmm. And it opened their eyes to the fact that maybe there's a Korean drama of interest. I've never watched anime, but ooh, this is interesting. Squid Games, right? All of this content from around the world started to get exposure, and it whet our appetite as customers. Now, the challenge is there's more content than ever, and I think all of us as customers and as audiences understand that you may sit down at night and you're like, I want to watch something, and you don't know where to start. So the marketing is about connecting the audience that wants to watch your content to the content that they want to watch. And so there's lots of content, lots of customers, but how do you connect the two? And that's where the marketing comes in.
Mm-hmm. Turning now also to you, Marina, because don't you think it is also the technological advancements of streamers, but also all the possibilities we have now with social medias and different platforms emerging all the time, that is actually like globalizing the thing even without doing anything
Absolutely.
Much, right?
Absolutely. So historically pre-pandemic, about 70% of every dollar for Hollywood movies theatrically would come from outside the United States. United States was the largest market, the market for which we as studios made our content. And then we both worked in the international department. We found the right way to tell the stories to get global audiences to come see our movies. As humans, we have the same reaction to archetypes and stories that get told, but what we hear about them needs to be localized and needs to be specialized and needs to be culture appropriate. So the internet definitely had removed any sort of borders that we physically share. You know, it's, internet is in English, YouTube is in English, people can consume our content in English. So that was the first barrier that took stuff down. And absolutely with streamers, with what I call the streamer production arms race, right? Netflix was spending, I think 2021, Netflix was spending something like $20 billion on content, where an average studio would spend about $5 billion in a year. So they absolutely leveled up the game of just making a lot of stuff. And we're used to a lot of stuff versus a lot of quality stuff. And we're used to seeking out a lot of stuff. I think the last stat that I heard was that an average consumer comes to a Netflix platform and spends about 10 minutes per session looking around for something to watch. Not finding what they want, but eventually settling into going, this will do. And sometimes, oftentimes, they will click on something and they've already seen it. So the level, the volume of content is overwhelming and is definitely global. So the beauty of these streamers that know more about you as a consumer is that they can surface up to you something that is relevant to you based on your taste, based on what you've seen, based on the segment that they identified you as. And that's why it's in their interest to surface up more stuff to you that it is global, because it also is a lot cheaper to develop things internationally than it is in the United States. And they're able to surface up the stories that you would be interested in from other perspectives, from other cultures, in a way that you can find them easier. So I think that globalization is only going to get more equal, or democratized, as you said, more and more equal in terms of us as societies merging closer together in terms of the production costs and the variety of stories that they can bring out to their consumers.
Mm-hmm. So at what stage shall the producers, filmmakers think of really like going international? to see the international potential? Is it already during the concept, you know, like, okay, I do something, I produce it here, it's local and local stars and et cetera, but actually I should think of international, maybe casting, or I don't know, like, do you have to, when do you have to think about that? Would you recommend?
It's a challenge because you have to make something for somebody first, right? Mm-hmm. And so by definition, if you're making something in Germany, it should primarily be for a German audience first. If you think about the world as like a heat map, you've got to be white hot in your country of origin. Otherwise, you can't expect anybody else to buy into your story for the most part. There are a few exceptions. And I would rarely be the person to say you should go paint by numbers and say, oh, I'm going to make this global, so I'm going to get an actor from Colombia and one from France and one from Italy, and you know, then everybody's going to love it. Because if you try to be too much, then you're not anything real, right? So first be genuine and authentic to the story that you're telling, and then figure out who else it can appeal to. And this is something we've spent our entire careers doing, is figuring out who else can it appeal to and on what level. Every story can appeal to different people on different levels, and so it's about finding those layers and that heat map. So it may be, for example, if you've got something that's coming out of Germany, what we tend to see is that content within Europe tends to travel well within Europe first, right? It's a region where there's been a lot of historic cross-pollination, and so the French and the Italians and the Spaniards are used to watching content that is from each other's country. So you start there, and then as it catches fire, again, following the sort of heat map, it tends to then spread from there. And that could depend on the storyline, where it's resonating. It could be based on genre. So we see certain genres travel in different ways. So you kind of have to be for somebody first and do it well, and then you kind of spread out from there.
Sounds good. So now if I go to my second part already, because I want to jump to the data part, because actually it seems to me also to say, like, okay, just have a look at the data and then you will know. So data is everywhere. Studios, streamers, distributors, we have massive amounts of data. And now we need to know how to interpret it really, like, really well. So what can we look at, which data, which signals, when we want to assess a potential of a film, and if not even global, maybe like local, international, global potential. Where do we start? Adriana, maybe first?
Sure. I mean, the classic data that you look at is box office, right? It's looking at past experiences. Unfortunately, the challenge of box office is that you get it the day that you've actually opened, so it's usually too late to do anything to influence what you're doing on a particular movie. But we do look a lot at comps, right? Anything that's similar that has launched in the past to give you a signal. But then you can get data signals all over the place. So you put out a trailer and you see who's watching it and you see who's engaging with it and who's answering it, and that'll give you signals about who you're audience is and who your potential audience is and what are they liking about it. Sometimes you'll get comments on a trailer that are going to give you signals of like, oh, they're actually reacting to the mother-daughter relationship. I thought that this was about a love story, but let me delve more into that and see if there are other audiences who also might find that to be a compelling storyline. And like I said, you've got to adapt your message to the audience, to what they are going to find compelling. And so you start to pull the data. Social media is probably the best generator of data today because it is readily available. You can put something out directly and get the data back immediately and start to interpret that data. Lots of mixed signals, which is the challenge of it, but that's a really good place to start in general.
However, I think there is a lot of data under behind like these wall gardens, so to speak, and this is what the streaming platform has. They have the data. I mean, there is just a very small amount of data which is actually leaking after protesting, etc., right? But outside of this closed ecosystem, how can the producers who do not have access to these gardens, how can they actually get these signals at all? So you were talking about box office, you were talking about trailers, but do you have any other further recommendation for them?
One of my favorite things to do when I talk about data is to use a quote from 2013. It comes from a behavioral economist whose name is Dan Ariely. In 2013, he'd said, big data, I always mess it up so I like to read it. Big data is like teenage sex. Everybody talks about it. Nobody really knows how to do it. Everyone thinks everyone else is doing it, so everybody claims that they're doing it. I like to modify it in 2025 by adding that those who are doing it are not doing it right.
Excellent. Okay.
So the problem with the walled garden is that they have incredible data in incredible micro segments identifying what people consume within their ecosystem. And when they're big enough, they are also capable of buying third-party data to then round you out as a consumer and to know you like horror movies, you usually watch them on Wednesday night, you also buy skim milk, and you drive a Tesla, and you have a cat. You can get that granular when you have first-party data. Can I ask you guys to raise your hand and tell me who knows the difference between first-party data and third-party data? Okay.
Okay, can you explain?
Yes, please? I'll explain it. So first party data is when you go out on a date with a person that whose name you know. You know the person, you know something about them, and you know them on first name basis. Third party data is like when you go out on a date with your consumer and you ask the waiter to tell you what your date would like based on the fact that you had brought other dates to the same restaurant. So they can probably guess what you would like. So first party data is called deterministic because you determinately know who it is. Third party data is probabilistic because the waiter may probably guess what you're likely to have. So when distributors have first party data, they can very clearly tailor what they target to whom. The problem specifically in a theatrical space and in a space where you don't have an ecosystem that's all encompassing is that first party data is really scarce to come by, and marketing happens through the two digital platforms that dominate advertising, which is Meta and Google. And both of them own the advertising market exactly because they don't want to share their data. Because the moment you start figuring out who your consumer is, deterministically.
I'll add Amazon to that list.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. As soon as you know deterministically who your consumer is, you no longer have to purchase that consumer from them time and time and time again. So one of the things that I am actually working on at USC with a lot of smart people is building what is called a first-party category data set. Because normally, when distributors market outside of the walled gardens, they have to guess who you are because the exhibition who sells tickets does not connect with the distributors who market tickets. So studios, Spray and Pray Media, to likely people, the tickets get sold at the exhibition, they're the retailer, and then one consumer in the middle, and nobody's coming to the table to say, we the retailers have an opportunity to share with you the data of people who had seen this movie or this genre, regardless of where they've seen it. Right, that's another walled garden in place because it's within each exhibitions. And you can market it cheaper because you don't have to guess who your consumers are. You don't have to guess, you don't have to go through Meta and specify, maybe we can look for somebody who may have read this type of article in this type of magazine to identify a sophisticated art house consumer. That's how it works. So working on a first party data for the category is something that I think everybody in the ecosystem should be interested in, and I will die at that pulpit, because everybody needs to know who buys tickets to see what and where. Now, I don't have the power to break down the walled gardens between the three streamers, I would say, that dominate, including YouTube, but I definitely think that theatrically, when you're starting something, if you're aiming to go through a theatrical production, distribution cycle, ask your distribution partners to get very early on at a point where you have an idea of who your primary segment is. Ask them to share with you what information they have on the genre for that consumer. They likely have a lot of stuff, if not overall, then at least through their own tool belt of movies that they've released, that can help you start formulating an idea of whom you have based on the comps. As Adriana was saying, studio system works on comps. They look at comparable movies, similar genres, similar. I actually read that Maya Hawke, Uma Thurman's daughter, was just saying the other day that when she was, somebody was a producer of one of her movies, cast actors in a film based on the number of their social media followers. Not the quality of them, not the relevance to their story, simply based on the fact that they can one-on-one reach out deterministically to a,
to have the better spread, so
yeah,
to be, yeah,
desirable, perhaps, millions of peoples, right? So ask, and ask often, ask everybody along the way on your journey, because nobody who tries to make movies does it blindly, right? It's at the end of the day, everybody wants to make money to make more movies. So everybody who makes money accounts for it somehow and justifies those decisions somehow. So ask often, ask early, don't be afraid to ask again. If you're within a walled garden, genuinely expect that you won't get much from them. Not on the first run, on the second, if you're successful, you may be better. But I can't encourage you enough to start asking from all of your partners for first-party data, start asking to help you get to that information, and asking questions is something that I will never stop, and I recommend that you guys don't either.
Excellent. Thank you so much. A great insight. Adrian, would you like to add something on the data part? Otherwise, I would jump to the audience connection part. Shall we jump? Yes, let's move on. Okay, this is great. So we want to know, especially, well, it's interesting what you were saying about the casting thing, right? So what strategies should filmmakers, producers actually adopt on the casting part? For example, if the stars are not globally recognized, is this taking a risk? Shall I consider when I do my cast, thinking of like, okay, I take these because maybe they have a little bit better reach, but I'm going to take this because it is a more global reach. You know, like, so is it something that you would encourage to do to have a better audience connection, a better recognition in different markets? Or
I think it's a complicated question because I think we have a tendency to overvalue the participation of talent. Mm-hmm. If you go out and talk to your average consumer on the street, most of them can name Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt and maybe a couple more actors and actresses. They may recognize more, but they don't necessarily know them by name. They don't necessarily seek out their work anymore, and it has become commoditized. The arms race that Marina was talking about amongst the streamers, the reality is that there's a lot of content out there with a lot of well-known actors who aren't that aren't necessarily great movies, for example. So I don't think that there's necessarily a need to have, you know, bigger talent. I do think that it helps if you have a role and you're considering, say, two actresses and one of them happens to have more social following and both of them would be equally great for the role. Yeah, go for the one who has more social following. You've got a built-in marketing mechanism right there you can tap mm-hmm. into. Yeah, of course, it's a no-brainer, as long as that actress also is reaching the audience of your film, because I think that there's also a tendency to be like, oh, this person has 80 million followers. I mean, just for an example, at the end of 2023 on Prime Video, we launched the BTS concert, and BTS, if any of you don't know this, is one of the biggest K-pop bands on the face of the planet, and it was their last concert. And every time we put out a piece of material, we had tens of millions of likes and engagements. I thought, oh my God, this is going to be huge. And then as it turns out, they didn't show up to actually watch the content to the level that we expected, because it's a social engagement. They're very supportive of their favorite bands online, but they don't necessarily show up to watch the content. So there is a danger in following the data and thinking that those followers are going to translate into success. I think it varies significantly from genre to genre and what your hook is. I mean, mm-hmm. going back to the very beginning, if you're making a movie that has a concept at its core and the concept is what's most compelling, then people most likely aren't going to care too much about the actors or the director or other things behind it. But if you're doing something that's star-driven, that you're going to use that actor in absolutely every aspect of your marketing, well then, yeah, you better have a really strong actor who can actually sustain that. Mm-hmm. So it's not a one-size-fits-all. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be afraid of using unknown actors. If they're really great as the characters, if they've got really great chemistry, go for it. I mean, we recently launched several YA titles on Prime Video and saw that the social following of the actors went from 10,000, 20,000 up into the millions because they embodied their characters so well, and the fans of the series were so into those characters that now they're into the actors. And so now you have an opportunity to grow along with those actors and cast them in other things.
So it's interesting because it seems to me that we have so to find a good balance between like data decision or a database decision and maybe a more creative intuition. So how can you balance this? I'm thinking also of the, as we were having the briefing together, you were evoking one or two titles which were great examples, Kingsman and also Fast and Furious style. So can you maybe reintegrate these two examples? I would like to share them with the audience.
So this is one of the clearest example that I've had of using data and insights combined with the creative instinct to actually yield the result. Because it's a creative industry and we're not selling bottles of water, it's very hard to predict. But because stories are global now, and we make the stories very centric on United States, it doesn't mean that the way that you sell a movie is the same in every market. So not only do, you know, some of the smaller actors don't necessarily travel across the globe. So, you know, take a risk on somebody you don't know for the right size film. But we had a film, I was going to say there's many different ways to describe a movie. The way that if I watch something or you watch something, if you were to summarize it, different things would come to the top based on your own psyche and your own experiences, what resonated with you. So we had a movie called Kingsman. Who'd seen it? Okay.
Okay, wow. Okay, yeah, good.
Thank you very much. So we had a first movie in the series called Kingsman, a very British spy film that Matthew Vaughn had deliberately wrote to be not your father's spy movie. So it has over-the-top action, over-the-top humor, an unknown actor and the main character. And we put a great campaign for it because, as I've heard from a consumer in China, we put a lot of money on that screen, right? It demanded theatricality. And in the Western markets, we did gangbusters. And we looked at, usually there are certain performers markers that we have in different markets, and we fully assumed that Latin America would have performed on par with other action films. So we put the movie out, and it did way below what we expected. So both of us had spent some time in Brazil and Mexico trying to figure out what happened. So the first thing we uncovered is that we didn't have enough consumers that we could find that could tell us why they chose to see the movie. So it really didn't register. So the first insight out of that is that now we have a second movie coming. We don't have to tell them it's a second movie because it's new to the market. The information comes, you adjust. The second thing that we found...
Matthew Vaughn was not happy about that, by the way.
Nope. The second thing that we discovered, and that was a little more texturized. This is where your gut comes from. This is why I say know who your consumer is and what you need to tell them. The second thing we discovered is that the idea of the gentleman spy, antiquated or current, didn't resonate with Latin American audiences at all. It's not in the vernacular. Spies are British, German, right?
Russian.
No kidding. Chinese, right? We've expanded. With Last Bond, they managed to make it to Mexico, but not really. So it was really clear to us that we don't need, and we had a whole new cast coming in because we killed everybody in the first movie. So we didn't need to overcomplicate what we were doing in marketing for that region because they don't know about the first film. We need to stop telling them about gentlemen spies and new humor and swagger. They don't care. So the recommendation was we came back and the most motivating element of what we had was not the story, not the characters, not the update, none of that. It was action. They really just wanted to see action. So our recommendation was when we came back, we said, forget everything else, put together a campaign that's like a Fast and Furious style, upcut to music. It's an action movie. Right? It's no longer a complicated cerebral story that's something it's not. It is just straightforward, uncomplicated action movie. I'm going to read you the numbers because I'm afraid of messing them up too. So on the first Kingsman, in Mexico, we made $3.8 million. And in Brazil, we made 3.6. If you follow theatrical, you know that seldom the sequel does any better than the first movie. On the second movie, in Mexico, we made $5.8 million, and in Brazil, we made $5.3 million. So this is an example of there's a million ways to tell the story. How you tell the story should be in the language of your consumer. You should know who your consumer is from the beginning, be open to finding other segments and to other ways of reaching them with the right story, with the right message.
That's a very good point. And I think also to have these different layers of audiences also, like the primary target audience, like being totally, I'm thinking of Conclave right now. Right? Oh, great, Vatican stuff, whatever, historical, la, la, la. And then you have to extend like, suspense, interesting, whatever. It's not a thriller, but okay, you still have a lot of suspense, right? And then you can extend and look at this now today, right? It's extremely well segmented. But anyway, I think we're done with this part of the conversation for now. Thank you for this great insight. And now I want to see stuff. So I'm going to ask Joanna Soleka, film marketing expert and head of Alpha Panda in Warsaw, to join us on stage. This is wonderful to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Right. So maybe you can tell us very briefly, what does Alpha Panda do for the audience, right?
And also maybe I will add that we are also based in Berlin. I'm Polish. It happens that I'm Polish, that's why I'm in Warsaw, but the whole team is here in Berlin. It's a very Berlin agency. And there are also very few film marketing agencies out there, so you might check what we're doing. And because marketing also became, I also think after pandemics, like everyone suddenly understood, we need to pay more attention to the last step in filmmaking. And we also actually call this a second step. So first you make a film and then you, like, as if you are making twice a film, you know, first producing it and then promoting the film to the audiences. And so we are, as a film marketing agency, we do everything that covers marketing, starting with pitch decks, digital marketing strategies, but also to execute what we strategize, which is handling the campaigns. And our list of clients spans from individual producers to distributors, sales agents, and also clients like European Film Market, because actually this year we are working for this place as well. We are doing both, like B2B and B2C, and here I guess I'm mostly will be focusing what I'm going, and I'm really, really excited to share with you two campaigns. One is strictly for B2B, because I'm going to talk about The Girl with the Needle, a Danish Oscar candidate that I handle a part of the small equation of the huge Oscar campaign, which is digital presence for the film. And I want to talk about, you know, exactly tap into what you said in the context of our campaign to understand who are you talking to, because when we say B2B, it means that we will be talking to the industry people. And for the awards campaigns, even more specifically to the people that are actually voting. And this is, as I said, just a part of the whole big Oscar campaigns, but because nowadays the Academy members grow in number, also they are scattered in between different countries, and it's became a little bit more democratic and not that US driven. And then with the digital world, there are also new tools to reach out to these people. And of course, you know, when you understand who are you going to talk to, then we will be definitely highlighting the fact that the film was nominated, that the film, you know, as you can see, nomination for the Academy, but also Golden Globes, main award at Kamerimich, and other awards that this film has received. Obviously, you know, the fact that the film was awarded, the talents behind the film were awarded, like, for example, the director, the Magnus von Horn, being one of the 10 directors to watch for this year. Also, the very prestigious nomination for the DOP, Michał Dymek, for the incredible cinematography that he did. And these are the type of the information that doesn't really matter that much for the regular audience. But for the industry, definitely, you know, that's something that you want them to know about it. And obviously you can say, all right, but you know, when I have this variety title, that's maybe enough. But actually you need to remind them. And it's sort of it also goes beyond just the awards campaigns. Also, when you have a film here at Berlinale, you also want people to, you know, to create a buzz. And then this is exactly where digital...
What you're doing right now.
Oh, we are working on 7 films here, you know, exactly. So yeah, and what we are doing exactly here now. And yes. Then, you know, for this is just an example of something else that we are playing, because the main challenge for us with this campaign was that Mubi, the distributor of the film, is very much pushing into the horror side of the film, and we want to really highlight the author-driven context of the film. And last but not least, also, you know, other new platforms that are coming into, you know, they are very important for when it comes to audiences, but also to create buzz. Who is on Letterboxd here? You know, yeah, of course, you know, and Letterboxd will grow as a platform, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And we are cooperating with Letterboxd. It's very interesting what is happening there. It's a generally user-driven platform, which, you know, an average cinephile will first check on Letterboxd what the other speaks about the film before choosing the title, and so we were definitely working also with Letterboxd. And what we also did, that's something that it's also a classic thing to have a very important person speaking about the film. For this film, it was Cate Blanchett. We released the film, this clip with the 15 minutes interview between her and the director. Has anyone seen it? Because we were, yeah, great.
Oh, full of hands.
But at the same time, you know, it's exactly to tell you about the power of the digital media. When, you know, in a few days we had over 300,000 views of almost of the entire 15 minutes interview, because that was Cate Blanchett, you know. But that's exactly how social media and digital world can empower you when there are big games being played between media and big press, especially around the Oscars. And when you have your own channels in the digital world, you can have also a control what is happening, and you can be much more visible with the content that you can produce yourself.
So I understand from this B2B campaigning aspect how important the timing, the targeting, the quality of the media, very well thought for every target. So it illustrates very nicely what you said just before, but like what exactly for whom, etc., etc. So you can see this is the mastermind of the strategy behind it. It looks like just a little clip, but it is not, right? It's very well thought. So now if we have a look on the B2C campaign side of things, right? Can you give us another example maybe on the B2C right of thing? Yes?
Yes. It's a small Estonian film, but it happened that it won Sundance and then it won Oscar. And from the Sundance to several other festivals, it also won as the best documentary at the European Film Awards. And we were supporting it from its world premiere. So from exactly, once again, B2B campaign that we handled around Sundance. But then, because we were already using clips, visuals, we could have already tested a lot of materials.
Interesting, and for the signals, yeah.
And that's exactly even more important for the films like this one, with a lot of sensitive content, so nudity. It was also very dark because almost entire film is shot in the sauna. So it's there are a lot of challenges when it comes to translate such a picture into formats that are social media formats, because when it's dark, you just don't even pay attention, you scroll down. So we tested a lot, and then when the film got the creative media support within the program that is called Films on the Move, and it was distributed in 33 countries, the sales agent came to us, to Outlook Film Sales, to ask to create what we called a digital asset package. And that's just a centralized package of assets ready to be used on digital that your distributors can have. And it's just to inspire them how to promote films, because you have already, when you have already worked on it, you know your film the best. This is your baby. You've been working on this film for many years. So you know what is working. You also, you know, you've been traveling with this film, so you also understand how people react. And based on this knowledge, which is really very valuable, you can already sense what will work towards the audiences. So based on our knowledge, together with a tremendous, because it was phenomenal what has happened with this film, with the director traveling, which was very important, I would say, impact factor. This film wasn't an impact film, but it became while traveling. What I'm showing you right now is also a centralized website that was created exactly for this pan-European distribution, that would really help local audiences that heard already the film, you know, to easily find out where the film is screening. And then, you know, we understood that, and that's always what we would suggest, and that's also what you said, when you are communicating with your audience, you're trying reaching out to your audience to understand what they need, and try to tap into the current causes, you know, that resonate with the current zeitgeist. And for this film, it was absolutely the inclusivity and body positivity, and of course, a very feministic message. But also we all understood, you know, that we need to bring in the air and light to a lot of visuals. So that's also, you know, a part of sauna pictures. We also had outside visuals. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I wanted to say this is wonderful examples to understand the mechanisms behind all of this. And I was really thinking, actually, I'm sitting here between these two blocks, and I'm thinking, like, we have Europe and we have the US. So I would like to be the Atlantic Ocean just for 1 second. I said, like, you tell me what I mean. Can you tell me also, because I mean, it's such a treat to have such an expertise around me today. What are the markets different in the US and in the US and in Europe, so to speak? Like, where do you see the main difference when you see, when you listen to what was happening here on these films, actually? Where do you observe in your jobs? Can you say something about that?
So if you don't mind, I'll start, just because I spent the first 20 years of my career promoting Hollywood films to the rest of the world. And then for the last several years, I've had the privilege of taking all of that knowledge and applying it to international content and trying to export that content outside of its country of origin. And in the end, it's the same thing. It's finding what's universal about it. What I do think is the big difference between sort of the export of international content is the potential upside. You know, Marina was talking about how, you know, there's this sort of 30-70 split where 30% of the box office is in the US and 70% is international. If you apply that to a market, say, like Germany may be 5% and 95% around the rest of the world, right? Or you may have 30% and 70%, but it's exponentially huger than your home country. And so there is really an entire world out there to play with. The US is the hardest market to break into. The US is definitely the exporter par excellence of the entire world, right? They've been exporting Hollywood films for forever, so they're a lot more resistant to importing, but more open to it now than ever before. So there's a tremendous opportunity there to tap into it, especially with young audiences. And I just want to say that, like, we're seeing that the 18 to 34 year old crowd and even younger are the ones who are by far the most open to international content in the US. And it's a combination of they're used to reading subtitles on social media, right? But they also get a lot of information from social media, which doesn't have geographical borders. They're getting a lot of recommendations from people who are fans of the same thing from other places in the world. And so we saw on Maxton Hall, we saw it on Culpa Mia out of Spain, where you have fans of a book from all around the world who are talking to one another, and then they're recommending other things. Oh, you loved this? You're going to want to watch this other thing, right? So it's opened up their world quite literally in the content sphere, and I think that's something that we need to tap into, because there are such amazing storytellers around the world, and the world is primed to listen to those stories. So it's super exciting. But it's the same tools. It's the same tools regardless of whether you're exporting from the US or from Germany or from Korea or from Spain, wherever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I think I will say that archetypally, there's a body of work out there that says that archetypally there are only 7 plots that we use and reuse with different characters. So 7 patterns to a story with different relevant characters. Like, there's always every generation has a Romeo and Juliet. They're not named Romeo and Juliet for every generation, but there is young, flawed love that ends tragically, but it's the most beautiful thing because nobody has to take out the garbage, right? So finding out a way to tap into that core of what you're telling in a way that markets receive it is honestly an art that comes with a science behind it. So, culturally, you asked about specifically about Europe. I can tell you it's been a while since I've looked at a property, but in markets like Germany, Russia, China, and Japan, we are culturally very individualistic, right? Our movies are often made in a very individualistic manner. We tell archetypally stories about boy gets power, boy struggles with power, boy goes over the mountain, slays a dragon, comes back, saves the princess, right? when you have a singular boy story, they don't travel as well to the markets I just named because those cultures are more multi-societal. So it's less about one individual, it's more about a group of people coming together to do something together for the greater good. So in those markets, if you look at superhero movies, the team-up movies do a lot better than individual ones, where comparatively speaking, in more individualistic cultures, even a singular superhero movie, it's a genre they've beaten to death, works really well. So think from an archetypal perspective about what culturally you want to tell. And again, sometimes you don't have that to tell that story. Sometimes you do.
Okay, good. Okay. Joan, I would like to give you also...
Maybe I would just have another approach from the budget perspective, because that's something that I can definitely say that there is a difference between targeting audiences, so using advertising to target the audiences in Europe and in the United States, and this is probably not a surprise to you that U.S. is much more expensive. So whenever you want to, you know, have a campaign, I don't know, for Sundance or for Tribeca or the awards campaign, then in the United States, then you need a much, much bigger budget than in any other country in Europe. And also there is a difference in terms of where do you find cinephiles, where they are. Facebook's actually almost not existing in terms of film content in the United States. What really works is more traditional Instagram. But now we will see what's coming next. But from our experience, there are these differences in terms of platforms. There's regional differences even in Europe. Like for example, in some countries, Twitter. I'm not sure it's anymore because we don't use Twitter for our campaigns anymore, but it used to be that Twitter was very strong in Spain, for example, but not really like here in Germany at all. So you know there are also these kind of small differences that can actually have a really great impact on what you can achieve. But I want to just tap into what you said about archetypes, because I've seen this amazing body horror movie yesterday here that premiered. It's called The Ugly Stepsister, that premiered in Sundance, and it has a great buzz actually coming from Sundance to here, and that's a multi-European co-production, but it's basically taps into the Cinderella archetype, and it works so good, you know, between the US and Europe, and I think it probably also beyond. Also, I think that in Asia will be very strong. So yeah,
we see these mixed genres, etc., like playing on all possible registers, and if you exploit it on the marketing level, you can really reach these secondary, tertiary audiences, right? This is interesting. So first of all, maybe what they think, where are we going? What you were asking right now, like what's coming next? Well, tell us what's coming next. What do you see coming up with the campaigning, please?
Well, as you know, the world is really changing. There are very powerful people behind Meta and Google as well. So we will see. We don't know. We really don't know. I think everything is possible at this point, I would say. I think the safest platform is LinkedIn, most probably, you know, to be on. And believe me, we see the trend of more and more film content-driven campaigns on LinkedIn. So yeah, this is also changing. But yeah, we don't know.
I can only agree. We are also leaving Twitter and Insta. We never did anything much because we didn't like it so much either. But we're expecting no blue sky and flashes and see what's happening. Maybe it's an alternative. So let us see. But anyway, that's...
Unfortunately, Twitter used to give out their demographic data. That's the only thing they were really... That and reaching older white male segment. But they gave away their data unlike everybody else.
That's
the only redeeming
point.
Quality.
That's a good point. But where do you see? I mean, you're a futurist yourself, actually.
Where do I see? I think that there is going to be a huge convergence of curated content that are made by tastemakers, you guys, and that are made by plain humans. The number one streaming platform in the world is what?
YouTube.
All right. YouTube spends this much money on content. YouTube makes this much money in advertising. So advertising is everywhere, as we've seen in the last few years. Non-ad supported businesses don't make it, right? We were all told for years that Netflix would never put any advertising in their content, and guess what? You have to, right? So they're kind of reversing back to what traditional content distributors used to be. So I expect a whole bunch of regression towards what traditional advertising-based models have been. I also expect consumers to become more discerning, less available, have shorter attention spans. I know none of this anybody wants to hear. So I'll take you back to the first party data set. Knowing who your consumer is, knowing what they like, knowing where to reach them with what specific message is what's going to make you stand out from your competition. Platforms will change. There will absolutely, I mean, Facebook is so irrelevant now in many ways, and yet I teach 22 to 24-year-olds, and they sometimes describe it as the yellow pages, even though they don't know what that is, right? It's an antiquated technology these days, but it's not going to go away for specific segments. Mm-hmm. But there will be, I don't know what's going to happen with TikTok, especially in our universe, but there will be something that will emerge that will also level up user-generated content in ways that traditional streamers who are now mature, in my world, I feel like they'll start incorporating it as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And you, Adriana, your take on the futuring of campaign and reaching audiences.
Yeah, I think I would second that. I mean, we'll go where the audiences are, right? The audiences determine where your advertising goes, where your marketing efforts need to go. So if they're not on Twitter, if they're not on Facebook, if they're not on Instagram, if they're not on TikTok, wherever they end up, that's where we're going to be to market to them. But I'll just bookend what I started with at the beginning in terms of the democratization of content. I think the next revolution is coming from AI. In terms of democratizing dubbing and subtitling, it still is one of the biggest barriers to entry to the global market. It can get very, very expensive to dub and to subtitle in 20, 30 different languages to reach those audiences, and AI is very quickly catching up in that area. So that's going to start to help you. And also in terms of tailoring the message to truly be personalized. So right now, I mean, I think what you were talking about of having the digital sort of repository with, you know, 30 different clips that you can use on digital is a great start. But when you need to personalize to 150 different types of messages, then AI starts to really get into that micro-personalization. And I think we're headed in that direction so that everybody sees a slightly different version of the trailer that pulls at those elements that are going to be most appealing to me. So I think AI is where we're going next in terms of a lot of this.
I would be terrified if the girl with the needle is addressing me and then they're like, ah. So I wrap it, stalk your audience, you're saying? But great.
You already stalked. You're like,
monitor your audience, stalk the audience. Okay. But then also approach the audience really also emotionally, because at the end it's only people who are actually deciding.
Absolutely.
Right. And that's a wrap for this insightful panel discussion. Thanks so much for joining us. A big thank you to our brilliant speakers, Marina Kosten, Adriana Trotman, and Joanna Soleka, for sharing their expertise. And of course, thank you to you, our listeners, for tuning in. This season of Industry Insights is co-funded by Creative Europe Media. Be sure to subscribe and spread the word. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts, and of course, on the website of the European Film Market, www.efm-berlinale.de. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, goodbye.